Hello everyone and very welcome. My name is John Olsen and I'm a nearly unprepared. And today my guest in the podcast is...
Catherine Leroux.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
This is the first time I do an interview in English or a podcast in English, so bear with me.
Of course. Thank you for bearing with me by speaking English.
Yeah. Otherwise, I do this in Swedish, but I will try this and we will see what happens.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate it.
You're a comic, an actress.
Yes, yes.
Photographer.
Yes, yes. A photographer and a voiceover actor and a waitress. You know, it all goes
in
there.
A lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff.
And you're from Colorado?
Yes, originally.
The only thing I know about Colorado is the NHL team, Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah,
because
Peter Forsberg.
Yeah.
And also we have the team captain is also Swedish. He's like one of the youngest captains in history.
What was his name?
Skoglund. No, I have no fucking idea. Yeah. I think that's it. I'd have to Google
it. What other famous things are from Colorado?
Weed.
Yeah. invented weed.
No, Coors Light is from Colorado, brewed in Colorado. A lot of beer is brewed there. We have the Rocky Mountains. Exactly. We have Aspen, some of the most famous skiing in the world. Mm-hmm. And we also have Colorado Columbine, one of the best well-known shootings in the world.
That's true. Yeah. Columbine. Yeah, I always think about the documentary with
I think
Michael
that happened.
Moore.
Yes, yeah. I think that happened when I was like 10 or something.
Oh.
Yeah. Tough.
Do you remember that?
I do. Yeah. I do remember it. It's a little sensitive right now because it keeps happening in America. And I remember that time that they didn't fix any school shooter drills or anything after that. We thought that was a fluke. Like, we thought that was never going to happen again. So it's just so horrible to like look back on that version of myself and kind of feel lucky. That because kids in school today are practicing school shooter drills.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucked up. I've tried to write material about this, but it's way too close and way too sensitive right now.
Yeah, maybe you can wait a bit and then you have some distance to it.
Yeah, definitely.
But you were afraid when you were like 10 years old and heard about this?
I mean, it was terrifying. It was a horrible thing to happen so near to where I lived. But again, it was just, I mean, this wasn't the thing that it is today where I feel like people are anticipating that this is going to happen at their school. At that time, it was scary, but we just thought, you know, this was a tragedy and something that was never going to happen again. It was like a fluke of these two rogue teenage boys that, you know, I mean, we didn't over-prepare for anything next time. I think there was a big push for, like, gun legislation, but it died really quickly. And so, I don't know. Yeah, it was really scary. But I don't remember being afraid the way that I think that I would now. If that happened that close to where I live now, after seeing how common this is, it would be a completely different feeling, completely different experience.
Yeah, but you've been in some, like, in national Swedish TV talking about, like, American politics and
for
stuff
sure,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen you a couple of times.
Yeah.
Sitting there in the sofa. Now is Trump elected again. But he's, you've been speaking when he was elected. And when Joe Biden maybe got elected, I don't remember all the times. But have you have like an interest in politics from a young age, or is
so
it something?
Much, yeah. I've always been interested in politics, and my first real experience with it was Speech and Debate Club in the U.S. And that was actually my first real experience with public speaking as well, because I never imagined that I would become a comedian, but now that I am, I'm glad that I have that experience. And actually, I was just watching George Carlin,
the documentary
about him, where You know, it's about him trying to find his voice. And I've been searching for that in myself for so long. Like, I've been doing stand-up for 7 years now, and I want to talk about these things. Like, I want to talk about what's on my mind and make statements about this stuff. But I find that so hard in stand-up because I'm still in this realm of just trying to be funny. Like, yeah. I just want to be good.
But I saw a change in your, like, act. I know if it was 1.5 years ago.
Yeah.
We'd had a gig at Snotty Seaside, a club at Södermalm, Hornstull in Stockholm. And I remember you went up there and you spoke about politics and... I don't know if it was abortion or I don't remember, but I remember I saw something new there and like, oh, Kefrin have started a new journey. It was something
definitely.
I saw there that I really liked. And I remember I told you about it. And,
yeah.
And after that, I have seen you again do more like personal stuff too, that maybe it's not that political. Sometimes it's political, but so I really like that side because I thought you were funny before too when you did a lot of very expressive stuff, sometimes about sex. Not every time, but sometimes it was. Sometimes.
Yeah.
So I really like that to see that your, would you say, development?
Development. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much for saying that. And like, I love that we're in the clubs together all the time. Like, we see each other all like every week at least, probably, or like every other week or something. And it's really nice to hear that from another comic. I really appreciate that. But I'm still struggling, man. Like, because sometimes when I do those political bits, sometimes I feel like in Sweden, and I would love your opinion on this as well, that I think... if you do these things in different countries, like if I were to do political stuff like that in the US, I feel like I might have some really interesting reactions from the crowd. I feel like Sweden's barely, like if they don't like your material or they don't get it or what's going on, it's just complete silence in the room. You know, you have nothing to work with. And it's like the worst possible feeling as a comedian because sitting in silence is so painful. Like I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate sitting in silence.
Yeah, but I remember we had a gig at a club called Golden Hits in Stockholm.
Oh, there was my God.
This guy, Israel, really funny comic. He's from Congo from the beginning, but he lived in South Africa too. But he lives in Sweden now, and he had this gig, and he had invited people, and it was nearly like 75% of black girls in the crowd.
Yes.
And that was so much fun, because I the latest episode I did was with Donald Sanchez, and he was there, and he just did one joke. I think it was like a pedophile joke or something, and they went like, ooh.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
But then he did another joke that they liked, and they went, yay! So they could change their mind. They was not like, okay, he did one bad thing, and they hate him, and I don't want to see you anymore.
Right.
That's a bit like that sometimes.
Totally.
With some of the crowds at stereotypical Södermalm audience or something like that.
Yeah.
So I really like that response, and they would like give you a lot of love, and if you didn't like that joke, okay, it doesn't matter. We like the next one, and that's more that mentality. I think you need that because otherwise, it's like it just doesn't become that funny to perform or if you judge people. It's like in real life, if someone says something wrong, okay, maybe they have a bad day. Maybe that wasn't, they didn't thought so much when it says something, it's fine. But if they do that all the time, maybe, I don't want to hang out with that person, maybe. But but they can say stupid stuff sometimes, and it's okay, you know?
So many comedians are trying to be offensive. They're trying to push your buttons. They're trying to say, get those reactions out of people where, you know, Daniel Sanchez, I am 100% sure that whatever joke that he was making about that was very cynical of society or like something that was going on with that and that it was true. And that I think that then it's so great to have those reactions where people go, ooh, you know, because that's what he probably intended. You know, he probably wasn't hoping that people were going to bust out laughing. And that makes the show so much more dynamic and interesting. And like you leave with thoughts in your head. Mm. And I feel like Sweden is catching up to that a little bit. But from my knowledge of the past, you know, 30 years of Swedish stand-up, that it's very cute, family oriented, talking about simple things like maps.
I have a map joke later, and we'll try on you. But it's not what you mean. But
I know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Because I feel like stand up should push your buttons a little. I feel like it should be something that leaves you feeling like, I don't know, just not. It's great to go to shows where people make really relatable jokes about family and about going to the bathroom and, like, you know, all of those really subjects that everyone deals with. Those shows feel great. But I also love it when, I don't know, you can experience something different than that. And it's a little scary sometimes with Swedish audiences. But I feel like they're getting better. They're getting the hang of it more. I've seen some Big Ben performances now where some hissing and stuff.
Yeah, but I agree with you in some sense. But I think also you can, if you do it in a personal way, you do jokes in that way, no other comics could do that joke. Mm-hmm. Then I think you get something extra. But if you do like female men...
misogynistic or homophobic.
Or just like, oh, men are like these, female are like these, jokes. Maybe someone else could do it. But if you do it in a way that no one else can do it because it's your personality, your unique point of view, then I think it's okay to do pretty simple jokes, but you do it in your way.
Totally.
You know? Because then you get something else that you don't get from other comics, you know?
Totally.
So in that sense, but I see your development and you're starting to, when we talked about, you started talking more about like you growing up, your family and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I remember you can say if this is getting too personal, but but I remember you said, oh, well, this is really hard for me to talk about those kind of things. But in some way, maybe you felt it felt good too, because it was a new step for you.
Yeah.
So it's...
There's some old saying that, you know, I think this is especially true in entertainment, that if something scares you, then run towards it.
Yeah.
And that's been very challenging, but I also feel kind of relieved. I felt sensitive, and it was really difficult to talk about because I'm hiding these things from people all the time. I'm hoping that no one will know that my brother grew up in a trailer, or that he spent most of his life in a trailer, and that my dad was an alcoholic, and that my mother has been married 4 times. Like, you know, it's a very difficult, like, it makes me feel like since I moved to Europe, I've escaped my backgrounds. Like, everyone builds up this new, you know, dreamy American idea of me.
Yeah.
At least that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that once I start telling people that I'm white trash, they're going to be like, yeah, we know. Like, you know,
like, but the thing is like the opposite. I listen a lot to the American comedian Gary Goldman.
Oh, yeah.
I like him very much. And he did this special, The Great Depression, about his depression.
Oh, yeah.
And before he was like you, hidden everything, and he thought, oh no, I'm not going to show myself weak or something. But then he started to talk about those kind of things, and that made him very successful.
Yeah,
and he became free in that sense, because now nothing to hide anymore, and people could relate to that, and he did a very good special about it, and it became stronger. I think you can do it too.
But what scares John Olsen? Like, what do you need to run towards? I feel like you open up a lot. Like, I, you know, like, I like to be kissed. sex or sensitivity, I feel like you've done, haven't?
On stage and stuff like that.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I have done some of those kind of things, but I'm scared to not be liked, I think.
Oof. Yeah.
I think I have to practice more of those kind of things to go up and just don't care if people like me or not, because then I will show the whole spectrum of me. Mm-hmm. So I think in everyday life it's like that too. I care about what people think, and that's why I do this podcast also. Before I did this podcast, Dog Idag, Die Today, where it's about death and stuff, and I did research for days and watched the comedian or the guest clips, and I did a lot of research. And just, oh, it's going to be so good. It's quality. And now I'm not preparing so much. Maybe I write down some subjects if we get lost in the conversation. I haven't looked at it yet, mm-hmm. but but I try to. No, it doesn't have to be this quality. And maybe that will set me free, because I had so much pressure when I did the other podcast that I was like, oh, I have to prepare this, blah, blah, blah. And now it feels fun again just to come here, see you here in your studio and relaxing and just have a conversation and see what happens. And and it doesn't matter if the episode is not that good. It's like, okay, but we had a great time, and it doesn't matter what people think about it.
Oh, it's going to be good.
So that's the small way of handling this, if they not gonna like me, because that's a quality of the work. But then me as a person is another thing. I have to like confront that and see that, okay, it doesn't matter. I can, some days I could, doesn't have to be happy, help at all the comedians, oh, well, you're gonna do this, or be like, sometimes maybe I can just sit in a corner and it's like, oh, hello, say hello to people, because mm-hmm. I think I should do that. But I don't have to be that social every time. Maybe I just get focused on myself.
Yeah, I struggle with that too, because I feel like in the community, we have a really lovely community in Stockholm of stand-up. And sometimes I also feel like a pressure to be liked and want to make sure that I like say hi to everybody, make sure everyone's feeling acknowledged even before the fucking code of conduct. Like I wanted to be well-liked by the community. And, I mean, in the beginning, that's something that also helps get you gigs, you know, because if you start realizing that the club owners are also gigging and they're also coming around and checking out the clubs and stuff, that being kind to everyone and being well-liked is something that gets you further. It's an unfortunate side of entertainment, but...
Yeah, it's true. In some sense, I feel like that, but also I think you should be nice to people.
Yeah, you should.
So it's not
especially in stand up.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not like everything is like thinking about. I have to be liked, so I'm nice to this person. It's not like that, because I think you should be nice to other people, but sometimes maybe I could think more about myself, just. Relax and okay, I don't have to be this very happy and deliver top-notch stuff every time, maybe like that.
Yeah. I am, first of all, I want to say that I haven't been to a show where you're not well-liked. Like, I think the audience immediately likes you. And I think it's because you have a very friendly demeanor and because you're, like, very self-aware as well. I feel like you know yourself, even though you, like, might feel insecure, at least you know who you are in some sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do actually. So in some sense I have worked with that, but in some sense I have more to give, you know.
Of course.
To just go up there and be annoyed at something. I'm so annoyed about this, or be like irritated or something. I think I have to put in those kind of emotions more. Because I think so in everyday life, if I have relationships and stuff like that, sometimes I have been too much showing like negative stuff. Oh, I'm depressed. I don't feel good. And then people are pushing me away. And sometimes I do the opposite. Okay, I'm just going to be this happy guy. And then they push me away too, because I'm not myself. So it's hard to have those kind of, and I work all the time with myself and try to develop, to feel better about myself, to feel better in life, but it is hard. And then you have to put it up on stage, the real you, mm-hmm. because sometimes you get stuck in some subjects. You know, now I talk about relationships, mm-hmm. and I'm a lot into it, and I like that, and the audience like that, but I want to do other stuff too, and I have did some work material about work and stuff, and that works good too, but then I want to add another, like, side of me, and that's hard in the beginning. You feel like, oh yeah, maybe they won't like me if I talk about this, or and then because you feel so secure about the other subjects. So.
I'm very like envious of people like Simon Jadenfosh in our community who constantly tries new stuff. I mean, I see him at Big Ben, or like if you're listening to this and you don't know what Big Ben is, it's like our go-to. It's like our community watering hole. It's like where everybody goes to try new stuff and like experiment and stuff like that. And I'm so envious because I know that Simon doesn't give a shit if he has a bad set because he knows that he's good. Like, I think that that kind of security is something that I really want inside myself as well, where if I have a bad set the first time of trying a joke, that I'm not going to leave the joke behind and not work on it anymore. It's like, come back and try it again. And I'm, you know, but I was just going to say that. never mind.
But you don't have that confidence of failing or.
I'm terrified I'm going to fail. Mm. I mean, I want every single set to be like, you know, if you've ever seen Al Pitcher perform as well, Pitcher, like, and Carl Stanley is very much like this. I have seen these guys watching these horrible shows where like everybody's bombing, and I'm just watching the show thinking no one's going to recover from this night. Like, no one is going to make it. And then someone like Al or Carl Stanley goes up, annihilates, crushes, brings the energy into the room, like completely changes the mode. Oh my God, my stomach. and changes like the entire mood of the room. And I want to be like that. I want everyone, I don't care what the energy is. I don't care who the audience is. They need to love me and they need to fall in love and their energy is going to get picked up. And I just am so disappointed so often because I'm like, wow, you know, this did not go well. And no one liked me. And I mean, I've had conversations with, you know, Simon and Carl and Al and everybody. And everybody has moments of failing. Everybody has moments where they bomb. And it just happens sometimes. So I'm trying to gain like a bit more confidence that it's okay to fail, like just like you were talking about as well. Like, it's all right to go up and try new things and be okay with the audience not completely falling in love with you that show that time, especially since we're like trying 5 minutes or 10 minutes of material at a time. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, but I think you're pretty hard on yourself now because I've seen you the last times I've seen you perform, you have crushed.
Oh my God, I know the last time you saw me, I did crush. Yeah. I was fucking amazing that night. But then two nights later, I did the exact same set and I was walking in there all fucking cocky, like since I had done really well 2 days earlier.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm gonna be the best. And I got like the closing spot and everything, and I was just like, you know, sitting back there, you know, having two beers before the show. Amazing. I sucked. I fucking sucked. No one laughed. And tell me if this has happened to you, where like 2 days earlier I did not film the set. It was amazing, and I did not film it. So my plan was to come back 2 days later to the exact same set, and fucking get that on tape. And of course, the camera's rolling, and everyone's like, what? Like, no, please leave. And I kept like trying to punch him in the face with hard jokes, you know, because I was like, I get very pissed off sometimes when the audience just isn't with it.
No.
And I'm trying to change that about myself because bombing is, and also like, especially post-pandemic, I feel like the crowds have changed a little. I feel like people are a little more disrespectful and they like yell profanities on stage, or we get like drunk people more often, you know, heckling and stuff. Have you not experienced that?
No. I don't know, actually, because before the pandemic, I think it was free to enter this club where we used to practice Big Band. Now they pay like 60 or 80 kroners. So maybe that have changed something. Maybe they feel like, okay, now I paid, I could, you know. But I think it was more people heckling before because it was free and
maybe
random
right.
People can go down and just do whatever they want. They just, okay, I go down and, yeah. And I haven't paid. So yeah. I think maybe it's sometimes.
Maybe people just aren't paying attention in the same way. But you're right. People pay to get into that club now. But I remember what I was going to ask you, but I think I've asked before. How long have you been doing stand-up?
This summer is 6 years.
Woohoo! I'm at 7.
7 years. Yeah,
yeah, just 1 year ahead. And do you know what's so fucked up about stand-up? It's like all the stuff that we're talking about, you know, developing your material, being comfortable with who you are.
Yeah.
It takes so fucking long.
Yeah.
And it's not even like, because people have told me if you've been doing stand-up for 7 years, then you've hit like the threshold of being done with being a rookie. Like I've been like, I still feel like a rookie most of the time. And I think that's so fucked up about our art form, because when we say 7 years, we don't mean the amount, like if you do one gig a month, we mean you better put your ass in 3 times a week, every week for 7 years before you even have an inkling of understanding who you are as a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
Isn't that fucking wild? Like, that's how I feel. And I've heard other comedians talk like that too. Like, 10 years in, you might kind of know what you're doing.
Yeah, like, but I think it's like that in all the art forms, you know.
Oh,
I
yeah, maybe.
I think that too, because if you're like a singer, you're starting to like, oh, I get my, now I know how to sing, how to express myself. I know better in 3 years later, you know.
True.
So, and you always develop that too. So artists, they change, okay, now I'm going to write more about this or mm-hmm. singing more about this, do another genre, and it's like with us, oh, now I'm going to talk about this on stage
right.
or that, now I'm going to change genre, do more observation stuff or more family stuff or more political stuff, you know. So
yeah.
you can change in that sense too.
No, I guess you're right. It's that what's weird about it is like performing. I sometimes think about musicians, like they build up to concerts, like, you know, they write albums and stuff, and it's like if they were to go out and show everyone the work that they did that day on stage, you know, like, hey, I wrote this song 3 hours ago, I want to see if you guys like it.
Yeah.
You know, like we're so public with all of our like working through our shit.
Yeah, man, you don't get that response. You know, I have recorded songs and stuff.
Oh, yeah,
mostly in Swedish. I have done some songs in English too. But and then when I perform live, you know, people, are they applauding? Sometimes someone yeah. was like, that was good or something. You know, there's not that response, you know. You don't know about if it was good or not.
Yeah.
But in stand-up, they laugh. And you know, yeah. immediately. And that fits me better, I think, because then I know what to work with. But when if you do a song and no one is say something about it, no one says anything, and then you're like, was it good or bad, or I don't mm-hmm. know. No, then you don't know. So maybe if they like, oh, this is great, and people putting or sharing the song, maybe, mm-hmm. okay, I did something right then. But mm-hmm. but with the stand-up, if you do a joke and you've done it 10 times and it crushes every time on stage.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I've done my work here,
yes,
because it
yeah.
works 10 times.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And hopefully you're always, I think what's really unusual about Stockholm specifically, or like maybe Sweden in general, is that we really practice the same bits for years. And I've noticed that other countries don't do that. Like mm-hmm. you can't be a comic in the UK, for example, and work the same material for 2 years. Like you'll never get booked. Like if people have seen you work the same bit for that long, then it better have expanded. It better have like new things in it. And I found that so fucking intimidating. Did I ever tell you the story of my first open mic
no.
in New York?
But before you tell me the story,
yeah.
did you start doing stand-up in Sweden?
Yes, yeah.
You did when you... Because how long have you been in Sweden?
9 years.
9 years.
I'm coming up on 10.
Yeah, so soon 10. Huh?
Yeah, okay. Like, yeah, I'm
like, still going strong.
I'm a cute. Let's get a spadia.
But you... Okay, so you... okay, so then you started doing, and did you went in like stand-up course, or did you went to an open mic immediately, or?
Well, like, So I met my husband in acting school at a theater school. So my intention was always to just be an actor never do anything else.
Okay.
And, you know, in some ways, I'm kind of glad that I got out of LA. I think that would have been a really difficult
life. You met him in LA.
I met him in LA. Yeah. And at the time, I remember loving stand-up. I love stand-up. I've always, but when I was growing up, there used to be like, you know, Comedy Central on TV, and I would watch stand-up specials late at night.
What did you like when you grew up? What kind of comics?
Oh, man, I loved, at the time, I loved Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah.
I loved Dave Chappelle. I loved George Carlin. Man, I would watch pretty much anybody that came on, but those are the people that I remember the most at that time. Mm. And anyway, even though I loved it, I thought that comedy was such a clown thing to do. Yeah. And it was beneath me, you know? So I was like, I'm never going to do that.
No.
And I remember going to see my friends perform at comedy shows in LA and just remember thinking, thank God I'm not doing that. Mm. And then I moved to Sweden and I thought I was going to move right back to LA. Like, I thought I was going to get my Swedish man, move us back to America. Get my Swedish man and get the fuck back to America. And we didn't go back. And it was like a year and a half in or something. And I was like, I'm so fucked. Like, I don't know what to do here. Like, I can't just waitress the rest of my life. Like, I need to figure out something to do and see if I can perform. And I started going to Big Ben. Where they had English stand-up nights on Thursdays, which they still have. And Yemi Alfalabi was hosting the show. He's a legend.
And
I came to see stand-up 10 times. I sit in the front row every show. I was fascinated and I thought, okay, if there's anything that I'm going to try right now, it's this.
Mm.
So I watched the shows and watched the shows and watched the shows and watched the shows. And that's why I still, when I see people repeating and coming back, I'm like, you want to try this, don't you? Because to me, that's us building up our courage. Like, we start thinking to ourselves, I can do this shit. After you've seen enough bad sets, you think you can do it. Then I spent like 6 years here. I felt like I had reached a lot of accomplishments that I wanted to with stand-up and doing lots of other things. And I was like, okay, it's time. I'm going to move back to the U.S., but I'm going to go to New York. I'm going to use my connections in the New York comedy scene, and I'm going to start doing comedy there and trying to be an actress. That was my plan. However, this plan began in February 2020.
I remember you're going to go to New York.
It actually still really makes me sad. I should figure out a way to talk about this too, because I was taking a writing course at UCB at Upright Citizens Brigade. So I was learning script writing. I was going to auditions. I was doing voiceovers. I had been to a couple of comedy clubs. I mean, New York is my dream.
How long did you work?
I was there for like 6 weeks,
six
I think.
Weeks,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, in the middle of the course and everything. And it was just really devastating. Anyway, so I'd been doing stand-up for 6 years. And honestly, I thought I had the biggest stand-up comedy dick in the world. Like, I thought I was fucking awesome at that point. And thought, I can handle New York. Fuck you, New York.
Mm.
And my first open mic in New York, I did the hentai routine.
No, about Japanese
porn.
Comics.
Yes.
Porn.
So it's an open mic night.
Mm.
And I thought, this is like some of my best material. Like, and I'm, this is going to crush. Like, this is going to, I didn't get a single laugh. And a comic who's like quite famous now, we don't know each other. Like, he wasn't at the time. He actually became famous in the pandemic. Like,
who is it?
Gian Morrissey. He's been in a few movies and stuff as well. But anyway, so at the time, he was sitting in the audience, and he came up to me after the show, and he was like, first time doing stand-up, huh?
No! God damn. God damn.
It was humiliating.
Oh,
and he
this
wrote
is after
about
5 years.
So. He wrote about it on social media, and he said, I got to see this hilarious, like, he was making fun of me, like, that was my, and that was such a healthy experience because I realized how little that I actually knew about stand-up, mm-hmm. how much better New York was than I ever thought that it was going to be. And, like, honestly, gave me a new perspective on having respect for the art form. Because sometimes, yeah, we think, I don't know, it was just very good to be thrown into the deep end and experience those kind of things. And also, we're so lucky that we don't have to pay for comedy here. Because people complain all the fucking time about not making money in stand-up here. And I'm like, bitch, you have no fucking idea. I spent 6 weeks in New York. I think I spent $50 on open mics. You had to put down five, you know, a dollar for every minute. So $5. I mean, you will go broke doing stand-up in New York.
For people that don't know, like you actually pay for get up on stage you can hand out flyers and stuff like that, bring people, bringers, shows. You have to bring like 5 or 10 people to get on stage. So we're a bit spoiled in Sweden.
Spoiled.
We don't do that.
But then, like, after the pandemic, I obviously, like, lost any opportunity that I had to live in New York at that time. So I moved back here and I kind of thought, like, how fucking awesome it is. Like, I love that we can get, that we don't have to pay to do comedy and that we can really stretch our legs in some shows. Like, doing 10 to 15 minutes is great. And you really have to work your way up a ladder in New York where it takes quite a long time to be able to get to that. And I feel like we cut that time in half here where you're able to do 10 or 15 minutes way earlier on in your career than you would if you were in New York or something like that. So I think there's definitely some advantages and I really enjoy living here, but it's, I don't know. I also both as an American, you know, we can always rely and lean on making fun of Swedish culture. And it's something that I struggle with because I feel like I do like to do that and I can be good at that. But it's such a hacky like thing to do and everybody's done it. And like, you know, people make their whole career off that. So I'm struggling with that a little bit as well.
But isn't that the same thing if you're heavy guy or lady.
That you make it your
joke,
thing.
Joke about your fat and stuff like
that's
that.
That's true.
So
that's true.
Everyone has their like
thing. I suppose you're right.
But maybe this American Swedish thing is more like obviously. But maybe if you're a heavy person, it's people can get tired of that too. You know, if you're just talking about that. But we want to hear some stuff about that.
That's true.
Because otherwise it's a bit weird because then we don't know anything about you. So something you maybe we want to hear about Swedish American stuff.
I suppose you're right. I mean, just like you were saying earlier though that what did you say? It was like, you know, that being able to be honest is and your perspective, that's what you were talking about. Only you can tell this joke. So I think that's really interesting. Like, so the one of the bits that I'm like really proud of and that I'm working on right now is the Halloween bit, which you gave me some great advice on. And that's culture comparison, but I feel like only I could do that because I came up with my idea through like searching through my conservative history. Like, what are weird things? Like, what are like strange things that I find about my conservative history? And how do I compare that to Swedish culture? And like, how are they different? And how could I relate? And what's interesting about that? So I think that you're right.
Like, yeah, but that routine is not at the same thing. It's another thing just to put in like Swedish words randomly and you laugh at that.
Yeah,
and that's more an intelligent thing you do, and you do compare. So it's not the same thing. It's important to. But you're an actor too. Mm-hmm. Well, what did you act like in school and stuff like that?
I did. Yeah, like I grew up doing the school plays and that kind of thing, and I got really involved with theater. This is another like U.S. moment. I got really involved in theater when I was like 16. I had an abortion when I was 16.
Oh,
and it was a very, and how this is connected to that is that I felt really outcast by my society. Like I felt like I received a lot of rejection and people were really unkind to me, and I lost a lot of friends because that happened. And it was just a really hard experience. And theater became the outlet where I could both express myself and that I wasn't judged by my peers, because I was with the other outcasts. I was with the gays, and I was with, because like no one was out at our school at that time as well. I mean, people were still getting beat up for being gay.
They didn't judge you.
Hell no. Yeah. And I mean, people, so I still have friendships from those times that I still have today. So I mean, it was, yeah, so it means a lot to me. And I still really want to fulfill that. Mm. And basically the acting that I get to do here, it's getting better. When I first moved here, like 9 years ago, there wasn't shit. Like there was like no English theater. Like no one spoke English in commercials. Like it was just very like, you know, nothing for me to do. But now I can do a commercial in English here because that's like fun and trendy for Swedish people. And that Swedish directors want to become international. So they start casting English speaking parts for their films. And so, I mean, it's started to happen a little bit, but I have ambitions to write my own TV series or write a pilot or write a short film or something like that. So I think that's how my acting journey is going to end up continuing.
You want to know something funny about this?
Yes.
Or when you told me about this now with the abortion and then you became an outcast, I feel more for you.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yo.
Yeah.
It touched me, you know?
Oh, thanks.
And then you open up new doors for you, who you are, and I like you more.
That's good.
I liked
Thanks
you
for
before.
Saying that. I appreciate
it. Yeah, but I liked you before, but now I like you even more because you told me that. So those secrets or those hideaways, it hides you.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and I have felt that. I have felt that when I open up about these things, that it brings people so much closer. And that's exactly what I want. I mean, I want people to feel like, I don't know. Yeah, there's just something, it's just really nice to know that we've all gone through some shit and that we've struggled and that we've, you know, had to deal with it. I feel like in entertainment, we constantly try to hide that, like that we're really successful and that we're happy people and that, you know, we're just making fun of it because we feel like it. And, you know, I mean, most of the time that comics are joking about things, it's because it's caused them some kind of pain or discomfort like horrible thing, you know?
Yeah, but I started with acting too. Also, I was an outcast. Then I started in the gymnasium and had this acting course on the school, and then I bloom, you know.
It's
a beautiful flower for being dead inside. Because I also met people all around the Stockholm and could be myself, so it helped me too, you know.
Theater's powerful like that. It can really help people. And in the US, like, we even have programs for like this famous actor, Adam Driver.
Yeah.
He is from the military as well. And he started a program where vets do plays and productions. And that's like a cathartic healing experience. Like it's supposed to be a part of therapy. So like even the people that you would really disassociate from theater still use theater in some way for like creativity, for finding camaraderie, like having friends. And I mean, it's a powerful fucking thing. And I think actually that comedians could really benefit from doing more theater because it gives you structure as well. It gives you like an understanding of production and watching things from start to finish. I feel like stand-up can be so fucking sloppy sometimes, you know?
But I think it's a good, you know, to find... Because sometimes people that have done theater before go up on stage and are more like theater. They acting like a stand-up comedian, you know. They go up everyone, hello, you know. And I don't know how a stand-up comedian sounds, but something like that. And then it feels fake.
Yeah.
So those people who haven't done theater before and they start doing stand-up, maybe they are more real in the beginning, but maybe they have a hard time when to do a longer set, to do act outs and stuff like that, because they don't have those kind of skills, but maybe they're more true to themselves. So So maybe actors have to take away about some of the theater manners.
Do you know who's a master of that? Is Ilan Almien. She came from a theater background, and she talks about it in stand-up. Mm. And I feel like that's what's so genuine is like, you know, because I feel like she's very solid in her performance. Like I love that she's not ever second guessing herself. Like, I feel like a lot of comedians are like, yeah, and blah. But she's very, like, you know, authoritative on her material that I feel like she knows where she's going and exactly what she wants to do with her time. And I feel like that's the theater background of, like, here's what I'm doing in my set.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have writing courses and stuff like that. So I think I have this more like, I don't know what to say in English, but red thread.
Yeah, the red thread.
Yeah. Because I place the same jokes at the same bunch and connecting to another joke. Mm-hmm. All the jokes don't have to connect, but you can have in a structure that feels like a story. So totally. I think that helped me when I do sets to have a structure, you know?
For sure.
Yeah. Now it's time for the Lab of Ideas. The Lab of Ideas. When we have comics, I usually try out jokes. If there are other artists, they try out those kind of things. They have to. But some jokes here. I'm not that used to do jokes in English, so I try to translate.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
I've written those in Swedish, but I have performed in English, actually. I was, I've been in South Africa. I did.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I did 3 gigs there, and I have done some at a big band in Stockholm. But
you should do it more.
Oh, yeah. It would be fun, but it's also, you know, if you start doing that, then you don't work on the Swedish thing. So
I get it.
It's what you decide to. But if I go in abroad, maybe in the future, then I have to practice. So, but I it was one joke. I don't know if you will get this reference because it's a Swedish reference. Maybe you get it. We will see.
And okay.
I'm directly translated, so it could be weird. This. I was not that cool in school when I grew up. All the other guys, they have, like, in their rooms, they have, like, posters with the girl models. I had a poster with a map of Skansen. Did you get it?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, Skansen is an open-air museum.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you knew it. Yeah. And then I told her. So the other guys, they learned about... women, female body parts. I learned about the quickest direction to the monkeys.
I love it. This is great.
This is fun.
This is fun.
I wrote it yesterday. And you can have other stuff like about that. But because I really had this map of Skansen. So I thought it was... It was true, so it wasn't just
I. Oh my God, John! Did you have a band poster or anything? Yeah, just Skansen?
I have Loop Troop. Was this rap group I liked? But I was also
that's good. You like, but I did have a Loop Troop.
Loop Troop rockers. I also my grandma, she taught me about like kings and queens and stuff when I was young. So maybe I could have some jokes about that too. The other ones, I don't know. This is kind of more like I was like that. But it's hard, you know, when you do jokes, because this is pretty joke. Oh, I was a geek, blah, blah, blah. But then later on, when I do like relationships material, it's not like some comics. It's like, oh, I never get laid. But that's not true for me. You know? Yeah.
I can't relate, bro.
No, but it's more. So I have to. I try to have this like I don't. My relationship doesn't work out, you know, to have that angle, because that's more true, and that's and then I have jokes on that, but it's hard to have it's easier if you have been it's black and white. If it was I never got laid, no one wants me,
yeah,
it's easier to have jokes. But if you have oh, I get girls, but they don't want to be with me in the long run. You know, so that's a bit harder, I think, too. But it's more true, and I will benefit in the long run mm-hmm. to have the more honest way. You know,
for sure, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So that was some jokes, and I did a podcast with Daniel Sanchez, and I tried out some stuff that I haven't. This one I tried on, you know, I haven't tried on stage. I wrote it yesterday. And this is another one I haven't tried. This is not that worked. I haven't worked on this one so much, but it's about when I walk in on the street and there was this man. He shouted at me and he said, "High five, hippie!" and I was like looking around like, "Whoa, where's the hippie?" You know? No, and it's the street was more empty than Systembolaget at New Year's Day. You know? Something like that. I don't know.
I like it.
But then I was like, okay, maybe I look like a hippie, but I'm not like a hippie. You know, I shower. If a real hippie would come to me and say, "Oh, you're so disgusting. You shower?" You know, stuff like that. So then I have a lot of like hippie jokes, but my problem is I don't know if Swedish people under 30 know what a hippie is.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Because in US, they would know.
1,000%. Yeah.
Because in Sweden, like, I don't know. And I have a lot of, like, jokes about I'm not taking drugs, so I'm not fit to be a hippie.
That's great.
And a lot of jokes about that. And then in the end, I'm like a hippie. I am afraid of confrontations. Mm-hmm. I want peace and stuff like that. Yeah. Then I have jokes on that. So the arc is I'm not like a hippie. I'm this da 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 da. And I have a lot of jokes of that. And in the end, okay, but in that sense, but it they have to know what a hippie is, otherwise.
Is a hipster a modern version of a hippie?
Daniel said the same thing. Yeah.
Interesting.
But I think like, and I told him, and I don't think it's that common, you know, with hipsters anymore. It was a time when people were, a lot of comics here in Stockholm joked about hipsters having these caps, or mm-hmm. What do you call it? Yeah,
like the hats.
Yeah, who go chimney sweeper hats.
Yes, yeah, yes.
Yeah. But I don't see that anymore. And it was like people are doing their own yeast and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But I don't see that as a trend anymore in the same way, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I always think of hipsters in the way that you dress and the way that your political views lie, usually. But that is so true that the 70s, I mean, is so far back for an 18-year-old. Like, you know, because that's when that term really originated, was like in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, and late
60s. For them, like, that's so interesting, because if you did this style, if you just said hippie to a group of like, you know, mid-30s up to 50s, everybody's going to get it. And everybody's going to be on board and know exactly what the fuck is going on. But, you know,
going on.
See? That's how I yell at my audiences. I'm like, how do you not know what's going on? But, like, I don't know. See, that's what I struggle with is, like, you know, yeah, finding the relatable string between, like, the 18-year-olds and the 35-year-olds, you know? So, because I don't think you should be afraid of the word hippie in that joke. I think that's great. And maybe even if you did, like, can I suggest something?
Yeah, of course. That's why you're here. Everything before, I just tried to be interested in you and stuff like that. I just wanted to help with my jokes.
Right. Super important. But I get that. And so I always ask because people are super sensitive.
Yeah, that's sensitive. That's what we're like, working out, jokes.
But anyway, yeah. I think if anything, like, it could just be fun to have a line where you, if you see someone that's 18 or like, you don't even have to, I guess. Like, okay, if you're under the age of 25, a hippie is kind of like a hipster, but they cared about things.
Or something like that. That's fun.
You explain to them,
really
like,
fun.
You know, because that's, you know what I mean? But I love the references and stuff in there as well. Yeah, you're right. Just build on that and keep fucking going.
Yeah.
Did the guy use the word hippie?
High five, hippie. He said exactly those kind of words. High five.
Who the fuck does that?
And I didn't have to translate it when I did the joke for you.
Also, who was this person?
I said, and I didn't leave this out. He was high as a kite. I said
he was high as a kite.
Högsmutus in Swedish.
But
he was an older man, you know. High five, him. So I should maybe tell that.
How did it make you feel to be called a hippie?
I don't know, actually. I wasn't sad. I have like this 60s, 70s clothing, but I don't know. I'm not like that because I also joke about like live in a collective.
Yeah, live in a collective.
But I'm not. I'm so like annoyed with sounds. Even if I hear my neighbor think, I will wake up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I will try to think about something even more specific. So maybe I can find something that it's really, really easy also, to wake up to.
And also you don't have dreadlocks. I feel like that guy. Yeah, drugs, dreadlocks. Collectives, being vegan.
Yeah.
Anti-war.
Environment.
Yeah, environment.
Exactly.
I'm just throwing plastic in the ocean for the fuck of it.
Just
you know?
To show that I'm not a hippie.
And I think that'll be really fun to like see the. Explain what a hippie is too, that'll be fucking great. I love this, this is great.
There was a fun line when you told about it's like a hipster but they cared about
because they fucking did. I mean it would be great if I'm not a hipster, okay? I have two guns at home or a hippie because they were super the reason why hippies existed, especially in the US, was political activism to go against the government. Everything about hippies was supposed to be like, oh, we're supposed to have guns, we're not gonna have guns. Oh, we're not supposed to have sex, we're not supposed to have abortions, we're definitely gonna do that. Oh, we're not supposed to have drugs, we're definitely gonna do that. And it's so weird that like hippies get this, you know, like peace and love. I mean, they were being rebellious. Like, that's the whole fucking thing. And hipsters can suck a dick because they're basically just trying to
but
be fucking
like
cool.
But it wasn't like Vietnam War also, or the U.S. War, like they told it. They call it in Vietnam. Yeah, they do it.
You didn't know that. Yeah. No, I'm glad.
Because it was not Vietnam. It was U.S. coming here, you know?
Oh my God! See, I've been okay. Wait,
my friend was there, and then they said
the U.S.
Vietnam War, and it's no, not Vietnam, it's U.S. War.
Fuck! I hate us sometimes. I hate us so much. Actually, okay, wait. Now I want to workshop something because I was thinking about this. I wanted to the things that I was trying to write for the gun policy jokes that I thought Swedes might be able to laugh at is like, well, I've been changing hearts and minds on Facebook. I just want to let you know the conversations with my Uncle Bob have been very successful. My uncle posted something like, we gave $400 million to the Ukraine when we could have given that to teachers to have guns in school or something like that. And then we start getting in an argument about the Ukraine instead of about guns. And his thing was, you know, that Americans think that we have guns because in case the government tries to, or we get invaded, that we can defend our own home the way that Ukrainians have done in this war right now. And I wrote, whoa, if you think that the Ukraine is winning this war with their artillery that they have at home up against the gigantic military, like multi-billion dollar funded army that is coming after them, then you're fucking wrong. And my uncle said, yeah, but, you know, wars aren't won with guns. They're won with heart.
And one with heart.
And then I said, yeah, but if
there... What does that mean?
It means that you don't, like, you don't have to, like, that there have been wars that have been won with lesser odds, basically. And I said, yeah, but if wars are won with heart, then why do you need an AK-47?
Yeah. Like, yeah. He's the hippie here.
He's the fucking hippie.
He's the hippie.
That is not the joke I wanted to bring to this conversation. Because no, I'm frustrated. I was super frustrated. And I think I'm going to try to work out some stuff about, like a joke I'm going to try tonight, but it's just like a 2-second commentary basically is that, you know, when I first moved here, everyone was like, oh my God, but why would you leave America? And now today people are like, yeah, I understand why you stayed. Oh, you know, so I'm going to try to work on that stuff a little bit.
Yeah, but that you could do more jokes on the same subject.
Definitely.
You know? Yeah.
Definitely need to work on stuff like that.
And you can do this before, after stuff too.
Yeah, before and after I felt like was a good place to start with that. What else? Or like that Swedes used to look at me like I was a celebrity when I first moved here, but now they see me as a refugee.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, like man, stuff yeah, like that yeah, kind of yeah, sort of. Yeah. And then the other joke.
Yeah, I told them I was from America. They, whoa, America, America!
Yeah, and now
they tell me, oh, America.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to try. Yeah, when I moved here, everyone would scream at me, America, fuck yeah!
Yeah.
And now they're like, ooh, America.
You're welcome here, but don't go back. You're welcome here, but don't go back.
Yes, it's very sad.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to visit Los Angeles in the winter. It's too bad.
Yeah.
Okay, but the thing that I really wanted to workshop was... I wish I would have written this down. I'm pissed off about the internet.
Okay.
I don't know where to go with this. Okay, so when you and I were growing up, like we had a golden time of the internet. No advertising, no spyware, no government looking into our shit. And now every time I go to look for anything, anytime I'm going to Google anything and enter a website, the website always goes, "Hi there, sweetie. And we were just wondering, is it okay that we have your cookies?"
Cookies? Yeah, now I understand. Oh, it took me a while. Oh,
this is why I haven't done this as long, because I don't know how to work this out.
No, but it sounds so sexual when you do
this. Because I feel like this is, because the whole bit is supposed to be like 20 minutes long, and I just haven't worked it out yet, because I want it to be about that we don't realize that, you know, we're basically being fed things that are very addictive.
Yeah.
And that I went through my husband's phone, my husband's phone, and he's delivered so much porn, it's insane. And I don't mean like the flashy, like awesome porn ads that you might get. I mean like an Instagram comes up where a girl is shaking her butt in the camera, and that's to her OnlyFans site, you know? Mm-hmm. But so she can't do porn on the internet, but she can shake her little ass. So anyway, it's supposed to be...
But the first thing there... Could it be?
I suck.
Would you? No, stop it. No. But the first thing, wouldn't it be more like accurate if you say, would you accept our cookies?
Or they want my cookies.
Is it like that? Okay.
Yeah, because they're asking for your data.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to really get at is like the underlying thing is supposed to be how awful it is and how creepy it is that we're constantly giving up our data.
Yeah, yeah.
But that the internet is always like, can I have your cookies? And then you're like, no, I'm sure. Like, do not take my cookies. And then the internet's like, but are you sure we can't just have a little bite of your cookie?
Yeah, okay, I understand.
And you know that the motherfucker that invented cookies doesn't have cookies. Mark Zuckerberg does not have fucking cookies.
I understand. I'm okay.
So it's like a bit of an angry rant.
Yeah, you can do a lot of things on that subject. Because there's actually this site where you can get like bonuses and stuff, like coupons and stuff if you give away your cookies.
So then you can
benefit of giving away your data to you can get a member. This podcast is sponsored. No, sorry. I'm not sponsored. No, I'm not sponsored. But so That's something also you can, maybe you can write on something. I don't know.
And it was about, and then I'm going to continue with.
Can you do something in everyday life? If, like putting a tracker on yourself or something
exactly.
like that.
There
if
has can, to be some like comparison to why
yeah, you
that's
go,
so.
Yeah, you go into a store and they will say, is it okay if you film you all the time and see what your product you're putting on? Your
do you mind if we save this receipt? Because we'd love to offer you some more bananas next time.
Yeah, like, exactly. But that's what's happening actually. If you remember on like ICA or Coop, another food store, they send in your like, you get like coupons with the discounts on different. So it's already happening.
But so the thing is supposed to go into what kind of ads that I get.
Mm.
And I feel like as if that I'm getting very specific ads that I didn't give my cookies. Like, I didn't Google this.
No.
Like, I didn't do this. But they saw probably my age, my weight,
Oh.
a picture of my teeth. The kind of ads that I get are like teeth straightening, like some braces. I get shapers for, like, to make my stomach thinner.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get workout videos. And the most offensive, I think, is Grammarly. Like, where someone has been reading my fucking emails and they're like, you need to shape up your shit. Like,
so it's grammar for learning grammar?
Yeah.
No,
yeah. It's an app for learning grammar. So, like,
mental.
So I get both, you need to look better, you're an idiot. And I mean, I feel like I wonder, and now I want to figure out a way to somehow do crowd work with this where I ask a man, like, or ask someone else, what kind of ads do you get? Like, what do you get? Razors and, like, boobs or, what are your advertisements?
Yeah.
Because I feel so obsessed with that in my mind right now that everything has changed so much because we had a golden age of the internet where we weren't, there was, maybe I should do more research on this because... How old are you again, John?
I'm born in 88, so I'm turning...
Oh, I'm 89. 30, okay,
34.
So they...
34.
I was like, whoa. But because do you remember when, like, you would enter a site that would have pop-up ads?
Yeah,
so it
yeah.
would open a new screen, like, open a new screen every time you got ads. Super fucking annoying. But
I have a joke about that, but it's more that what I have written in my notes. It was a joke about going to a shrink. I wrote it in my notes, and then I got 5 minutes later in my social media, I got do you have to go to a shrink? So I have a joke about it, and then it continues with something else after that. But that's a complete other joke. You are more like into like cookies, giving away your data. My joke is more about, Google spying on you. But you are more like you giving away the data. That's another angle. So that's interesting. Yeah.
I was going to try to tie this in. Have you heard my mom gave me a DNA kit. I try not to make up jokes. I try to make, like, if I'm telling a situational joke or telling a story, I try to make sure I never make those things up because I think most of the time life is funnier. But I did make this joke up.
Maybe if the feeling is true, then you can make up stuff. I think if the feeling is true,
that
the emotion you have for the subject, then I think you can make up stuff sometimes. I haven't heard of DNA, I think.
And I just started working on this as well. I could definitely use some legs here. But it's that my mom bought me a DNA testing kit because Americans are obsessed with their heritage and we want to know where we're from. But, you know, she gave it to me during Christmas. I got up, I read it in front of the whole family, and I got up there and I was like, you all are not going to believe this, but I am actually 98% white trash.
Yeah,
2% privilege. Look at that.
Yeah,
and my dad got 98% privilege.
But that's more like That's not, oh, I make a situation up. It's more, that's more a joke.
It's a joke. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think it's different between I make a whole story up or, but that's a joke, you know?
But, what I was thinking was what I was hoping, because I didn't actually ever take a DNA test. And I've made sure of that because it's the only fucking thing. It's the only cookie I have left that they haven't taken yet.
That's true. Really interesting.
I wanted to tie it around like that because I've given away so much of myself and given away all this data, but you can have this last cookie.
Oh, but that's really interesting. I haven't turned that angle before, and yes. that's the last cookie I've left. That I like that. I really like that because.
Oh. And that Mark Zuckerberg holds the cookie jar. I don't know, or he is the cookie jar, and I'm looking for a cookie monster to go and eat up that shit or something. I don't know. I've been been trying to work on wordplay with that, but yeah. I just haven't been brave enough to try this because I'm so afraid that it's like a... I don't know. It just doesn't feel funny yet. Like, it feels like I'm too angry and, like, that I don't have enough distance from it to be able to write, like, funny punches on it.
Yeah, but I think you should try... Don't extend it too much in the beginning. Just try small parts of it just to get into it. Otherwise, it becomes such a big
long
task.
Long rant.
Because you want to feel that, oh, are they interested in this? Do you have something... So do a small bit of it, and then...
I was going to try cookies tonight. I should do it. Maybe I should open it up with a question. Like, because what do you say in Swedish? I mean, do you say kakor? Or do you say dotta? Or like...
It says these cookies, but you say you give away data. You ger bort data. Men att de accepterar cookies. Alltså, så att you say cookies.
I've seen some they have sites.
Sometimes they have said kakor, but I think cookies are more common.
Yeah, but I would see the reaction that you just had of going cookies, like... That's part of the other reason why I haven't done it is because when I talk to people about it, it takes a second for people to click on to like, wait, what are you talking about? It's because you think when someone's doing a stand-up set, they must mean the physical cookie.
Talk about that data before. You know, all the websites, they want to give you data, data, and they ask you, can I have your cookies?
Yeah.
They are big cookie monsters. Still.
Cookie monsters.
Yeah, you can
that's
say
what they are
cookie monsters. They like want. Yeah. They really like cookies.
And then they throw up those cookies on websites and then they have
your cookies.
They can't
have enough. They want all the cookies in the world. Yeah, no. They cookie monsters.
That's actually really good. I should just do cookie monsters. But okay, I'll definitely work on the intro to that to get people involved in the data thing. And I was hoping that maybe the white trash thing might be the intro to that.
But Cookie
Monster,
you see like a hairy
blue monster.
Blue monster says, I want to know your age. I want to know.
That's fucking hilarious. That's fucking great. Oh my God, that's genius.
I want to know your age. I want to know your
when were you last on your period?
Yeah. Last period. I sound like
I get
a Joda.
I get so many fucking period things. It's crazy. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not interested in period underwear.
So do a Cookie Monster act out.
God.
Yeah.
Is that too corny?
No.
If I do the Cookie Monster act out?
No, it's fun. I'd try it.
Most of my successful bits, unfortunately, are act outs.
Yeah.
Like big time act outs.
You do that really well. So
I get committed to the act outs.
But
that's the only reason why they work. And people are always like, act outs. And honestly, your joke could be shit, but if your act out is confident, then it'll probably work. I've seen it happen
but
so many times.
The idea has to be good, because otherwise the act out wouldn't work.
Thank you, John. This was a really helpful thing, because now I'm going to have some fun today, figuring out how I might go into the first, two minutes of that bit and just try it out.
Yeah,
because you're right.
Yeah.
Like, it needs a little more space and some air to get.
And later on, you can do, call back with the Cookie Monster in some other joke, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then the Cookie Monster comes again. Something. I don't know. Yeah. So, later on.
Genius. Genius. I'm going to... And then when people give me advice on jokes, and I usually take it, I say, Okay, I'll give you 25 crowns for every time I say it.
No. Yeah. No, no.
I'm not
no.
serious. No. I mean, but I'm... But I,
and I was checking my bank account and I was like, I know, okay, right? It's, it sounds pretty accurate. 25 crowns.
At some point in the future, like if I ever make it big, John, like you're going to be like, I would like my 15,000 crowns. Yeah. This has been viewed many times.
Yeah.
But that's the last thing that I wanted to say on the podcast is that I think it is so fucking helpful to have joke writing sessions. And I half of my act of anything that I do was someone helped me write it. Like, I've never been a solo person. And I think comedians should be way more open to that. That does not mean that after I perform a set, do I think you and I trust each other. I feel like we're really close in that way, and that we can talk to each other after a set.
Yeah.
If some random ass guy comes up to me or some random comedian that I've never met before comes up and starts telling me how I should do my bits in a really extensive way, I find it a little like, okay, what's your name again? And what did you have about that?
Yeah, but that's you have to feel that the other person trusts you. You have to feel like, okay, you're on the same level, or you have something to say. You can ask. Is it I
that we've
thought
agreed
about something
to it? Yeah, yeah, that we've agreed to it.
Is it okay if I tell you something about your set and if you think it could help you, but you don't go in front to anyone and do that
because I feel like the advice that you've given me about jokes has been super helpful. And also, like two lines of the Easter joke that I'm doing was written by Robin Grubstrom. I mean, he wrote the punchline for that joke. I mean, you wrote this idea for me that I'm going to do the Cookie Monster thing.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, maybe it doesn't work, but...
could be.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, thanks, John. No,
minus
no,
25 kroners each time you try it.
No. But I think comedians and other artists should be open to that kind of collaboration and like working with each other like that. I feel like it's super, super positive. So yeah, I love how I'm like, thank you so much.
Yeah. I'm a thank you for joining me today.
Yes, thank you for doing English. You fucking nailed it.
Your
English
first time
is amazing.
It's hard, but sometimes it's when you go into like technical stuff, it's pretty hard to do it in English, but I've done my best.
I love that Skansen joke.
Oh, thank you.
You gotta do that in English as well. I mean, if you did that at the Laugh House, for example, on a Saturday night, people would fucking love that.
Well, maybe the tourist knows Skansen if they.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so maybe.
But a lot of those shows are not usually made up of tourists. The English nights are made up of expats.
Expats. Like, yeah. But if they would be like,
I think they know. There's a chance that they don't know. I love how I'm like, they know, John. And then you do it like three times. Yeah. And you're like, they definitely didn't know.
But
Catherine.
It's one of the most famous museum in Stockholm.
And it's like a huge tourist attraction.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the second thing that I ever did here was go to Skansen.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's good. We will see if it works. I will try it on stage soon.
Yeah.
If people want to follow you, how do I...
Hi, everyone. you can follow me on Instagram, Roulette LaRoe, or you can find me by typing in Catherine LaRoe, LeRoux. There's
something else you want to, like, upcoming gigs or something?
Yeah, I mean, I have some gigs coming up. I'm going to do Loon Comedy Festival in September.
Your
on
own
the second,
solo
my
show?
My own solo show, where I reveal my white trash background.
Oh, that's good.
So nervous for that. Yeah, if you're going to be in Lund, definitely check that out. I'm going to do a test show in Linköping. I'm probably going to come back and do the show again in Stockholm. And also, I have my own podcast, Cine Junkie Podcast, where we do movie reviews. I would love it if you'd guest sometime on that.
Thank
That'd
you.
Be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are on a hiatus right now, but we're coming back very soon, right? And maybe the end of August, also early September, we're going to be coming back reviewing the movies from last year.
Yeah.
So catch up on your movies and check us out at Cine Junkie.
That sounds Fun. And you can follow me at Instagram, John_Olson_, and johnolson.se is my homepage.
Oh my God, I have a homepage, catherinelerow.com.
Yeah, check it out, catherinelerow.com.
catherinelerow.com.
You have been listening, I'm John Olson, and you've been listening to Nearly Unprepared with me, John Olson, and the guest of the week,
Catherine Leroux.
Have a good day.
Thank you, bye.